All right, so we left off on Daf Beis and the Beis. Actually, Nachim Amar Aleph right at the top. And the Gemara had given the Lishna Kama of Hezekiah, and now it's going to have the Lishna Achrina, which we all know at this point. I certainly hope we know. The Gemara says the following. Lishna Achrina, Amrilei, Savruha, Lishna Achrina Amrilei. So they there's presented different Lashon. Savruha, my Mechitza, Pulta. Mechitza doesn't mean a wall. It means a division. And there the Torah says, you would divide up the plunder, and the mechatzas ta'idah was the half of the Eda had. Once they agree to divide up the chatzer, and the Gemara will ask in a little bit, whether or not, why can't they just back out, which is a topic we will probably explore in Iyun about Kenyan Dvarim. But right now, the Gemara says, once they agreed to divide up the Chatzar, so now they build a wall against their will. Alma Hezek Riyash Mehezek. That's what you should infer from the Mishnah, that once you have a divided Chatzar, the fact that you enforce the other party to build the wall is because Hezek Riyah actually matters. It's considered a form of Hezek. Keep in mind in general that when we talk about Nezikin, Nezikin do not have to produce damages to be prohibited. The Gemara will say in the second paragraph, that you're not allowed to do things that may cause damage, even though you're not going to be liable for the damage. So the absence of Tashlum in itself doesn't indicate an absence for the sir. One of the questions when you learn Rabba Kama, Lamdonim like to ask is, what's the mark where you're not allowed to damage someone? I understand. So if I burn Gabe's Gemara, so I have to pay for the Gemara. I get that. But that doesn't mean, how do you know it's usher to burn the Gemara? How do you know it's usher to be gonev almanas l'shala? The text says lo tegdovu. There's prohibition. You can't do geneva. But what's the prohibition of doing mezek? Maybe it's for los tassim damim b'veisecha keep on l'chami mena. Maybe it's in the mitzvah makah and the prohibition los and damim implies that you're not allowed to do things that cause damage. Although that's more a concern of misa than it is a concern of mezek. Okay. Now, one just comment here about Machlokas Harishonim. This is, I already mentioned this. The Gemara in a little bit is going to ask, the Gemara is going to say that the Ratzu Lasus Mechitza. So the Gemara is going to say, why can't they back out? And then the Gemara is going to say, they made a kinyan. They're going to say, but it's a kinyan varmi alma. Tosas here, Ki Ratzu, the second Dibur Masil, points out why the Gemara didn't ask that question on the first Lashon. He says that, according to Mount Damar, Mechitza is a wall, because it was understood in Meshabed and the Chosim to Binyan HaKosel. But somehow it never occurred to them, it's not entirely clear why it didn't occur to the Gemara that if he agreed to divide the Chosim, they made a kin in each part of the Chosim. Okay, but be that as it may, a lot of Rishonim say that. But if you pay careful attention to Rashi on Daf Beis Amud Beis, and Rashi, what does Rashi say it? This on the third line of the page, Ulakaman Parak Kisharatsu Mayhavu Lahadrabu. So Rashi understood there's no difference. So the Gemara, I mean, this is not really fundamental machlokas here. It's just a question of whether Gemara. There's no difference in din in any of these things that we showed them. It's just, did the Gemara wait until it was done to ask the question on both, or could the Gemara only have asked the question on the second Lashon? In this particular issue, I don't want to say it's immaterial, but it's virtually immaterial. Okay, it's Peirush HaGemara, it's important, but if the Gemara had thought differently, it could have asked in the first Lashon according to Tosfos. Like, the Gemara could have framed it that way. But methodologically speaking, this is a very important point in learning Gemara, which is to recognize when the Gemara asks the question. The two most important words or phrases in the Gemara are, the two most important words are, Ephraim, you can guess one I'm thinking of. What's the most important word in the Gemara? A three-letter word. Ella. How many machlokas have we shown him are based upon the presence or the absence of the word Ella? And that's in the Gemara, it's in the middle of a sugya, and it shifts. What Ella means were so sure the entire video, or much of the video before, new approach. As opposed to when the word Ella isn't there, it means it's just a modification within. And the second thing is, Ihachi. Ihachi, it's a phrase, not a word. Ihachi is central, because the Gemara, when it says Ihachi, implies that it couldn't have asked the question until the last answer it just gave. And that sometimes can be very, very important. So here you don't have those magic words here, because the Gemara actually it spells it out. In other words, if it's a embo din chaluka, so kiratsu my having the hadruba, right? But the Gemara could have said the same thing, you know, if you don't have to build a machitza, then because they agreed the machitza, they could back out. So just look, because the Gemara thought the answer was obvious there. But it is really important to always consider that in reading a circuit. Okay, so now the Gemara continues. Hezek Riyah Shmehezek, which we're going to talk about not now in the Kiyas, but Hezek Riyah is a central Jewish value. Hezek Riyah is tied up within the notion of privacy. It's near greatly misunderstood concepts in the modern world and in the Orthodox world. There's very little understanding of what Sneus actually is, but it is absolutely and categorically a central Torah value. So when we go through the Sugya more and then what we'll talk about in that context. Okay, so now the Gemara says, the Eima Mai Mechitza, of course, this is basically inverted from the first Lashon. Why not say Mechitza Suda? Kiditanya Mechitza Sakem She Nifritza Omer Lo Gedor, Nifritza Omer Lo Gedor, Nisa Shemen Ava Lo Gedor, Hareza Kidish V'chay Dach V'yisa. The time of the Ratsu, Holo Ratsu, Eina Chayven Oso, Alma Hezek Bia, Lav Shmei Hezek. So you could have gone exactly the opposite route. So the Gemara says, no, Ihachi Bonin Es HaKosel, Bonin Oso Mivoyinai. Okay, which is a question the Gemara posed earlier, and it gave a teretz why it had to stay bonin es hakosel, not bonin oso, because you would have thought of the Sifas De'alma. Recall that Tosus didn't think that was such a great teretz, which is why he thinks we passed on like Rosh Hashanah. Okay, then the Gemara says, okay, Elamai Plugta. Ihachi Shiratsu Lassus Mechitza, Shiratsu Lachtos Mivoyinle. Let's get some better Mishnei Kibra here. The Gemara says, Kedamri Inshi, Tonavid Plugta. Let's make a plugta. So I guess that's like, let's make a machitza. I'm sorry, let's make a division. So, shut jaras machitza. Somehow machitza is, again, plugta is not usually the translation of machitza, but maybe it is. Maybe that's what we should conclude from this. Okay. So now, the Gemara says, v'ihezek v'yesh mehezek, okay, so very nice. So if Hezek Riyah is a Hezek, so now why, even if they don't agree to divide it up, why can't I insist on my right of privacy?
The Gemara answers, no.
Our Mishnah is in a case where the Chatzer is too small, where you can't force the other party to divide up the Chatzer, because a Chatzer that is below a certain size isn't useful as a Chatzer. So to take, if you're at the threshold, if you divide in two and both parts will essentially be useless, you can't force the other party to divide. Right? That's the problem of the Mishnah, that in order to force division in the partnership, it has to be kidei lozeh u kidei lozeh. Whatever, and each particular thing, field, garden, house, concert, each has its own, what is kidei lozeh u kidei lozeh.
Okay, so now the Gemara says, and therefore it's for who the Ratsu, they have to agree to divide the Chatzer. So now the Gemara says, my kamash malan.
So what's the Mishnah telling us? That if there's no din of chalukah in it, that we can force them to build, that if they agree, they're allowed to divide up the chatzer.
And I think you have to say in the Gemara, what the Gemara is assuming the following.
If Hezek Riyah is considered Hezek, so then, what's the chiddush to the mission? Two people have a chatzer, they agree to divide it, so they have to build a wall. Yeah, so you don't need this to tell us. We know that hezek is for hezek. So presumably, all that you're teaching us, at least this is the kasha of the Gemara, all that you're teaching us is that two people who have a chatzer, but the chalukah, if they agree to divide it up, then you can make them divide it up. Now, the Gemara is going to answer, but the answer is obvious on some level. It's teaching you hezek riyah shmei hezek, that you need to build a real wall, which is what the Gemara is going to say. But that was the kasha of the Gemara is, I assume, if hezek riyah, lav shmei hezek, so you're teaching us just that if they agree to divide the chatzer, they're allowed to, even though it's too small.
So that's what the Gemara answers, though. First of the question.
We teach you hezek v'yesh v'hezek. We teach you that you know, once you divide, to divide up a chatzer that's divisible means, obviously, you're going to make a division, so you put something to indicate a division. So, kamash balan hacha, kosa. No, but hezek kriyash behezek, you need a real wall. The Gemara says, v'les teha v'les teha. Okay, so teach us, Aramish, why do you need to tell us, emasai? Once you tell us that two partners who agree to divide up a chatzer, which implies they need to agree to divide the chatzer, so we know that that it's a chatzer which is not big enough, and yet if they agree, it's okay. So why do you need the later? Why need the later mishnah? So the Gemara says no. Asefa itzricha nei. V'chis tei hakodesh apal b'shashtei motzim lo yachlod. This one thing that you're not allowed to divide up is Kisvei Kodesh. Now, you can divide a Kisvei Kodesh if you have two separate Sfarim, but if you have written one cloth, today we don't, we generally don't write Sfarim except for Sefer Torah in one cloth. But, if you learn the, we're gonna learn, God willing, since Intro to Bible is no longer required, in Yeshiva College, but, so, first Gemara that many of us would start with in the course is Daf Yudal on the Days, the Brisa, which is Sidron Shel Nevi'im. So the Brisa there lists what's the order of Nevi'im. And the order of Nevi'im, which is not what's in our Tanakh, the order of Nevi'im is Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Isaiah, and then Treyas. So in the Gemara's whole discussion, why? Because that's not the chronological order. Our Tanakh, for the most part, are printed in chronological order. But some of the Shalom say that the purpose of knowing the Sidron Nevi'im is not an academic enterprise. The purpose of knowing is if you're going to write them in one Galilah, in one Sefer, you're supposed to put them in the proper order. So if you go to the Beis Medrash, for example, and the Beis Medrash has klafim of the Nevi'im, and they read an after out of them, they don't have the klafim written in one sefer. Each Navi is its own sefer, so there's no nafgamina in the order Sidron Shel Nevi'im. But when you had Sfarim that were written multiple things in one sefer, so then you're not allowed to cut them and make a division that way. That's a bizarion for the Sfarim. But all other things that don't have Kedusha, if you want to divide them up, you're allowed to divide them up. You need the Mishnah for that purpose, okay?
Someone asked Lisa before, why is it true that there's a certain size for the chatzer and always used for the other one? Why can one partner force the other partner away?
So the assumption, I would give a mashal, you know, we have marriage and we have kitten. And to borrow, even though this is not enforced, there's a din that if a woman says ma'isalai to her husband, I find him to be revolting. We will force the husband to give the wife a get. We'll make her wait 12 months. We'll make her forfeit aksuba. But we will force the husband to give a get. The Chafnei Ashkenaz vehemently disagree with the Rama. And there's a different takana. There's a different takana. The Gonim thought the woman is allowed. We'll force for other reasons. We force the husband to give a get, even though Shiloh didn't. But the Rama held it was kiddin. But we want to make sure the woman is just not. She didn't find a cuter guy that you know. She wants to move on to the next great thing. The Rambam uses a lashon there. He says, "Ena kishuyish tibayelo." And we don't force people into partnerships when you don't like being with the other person. When you want to go off, you know, we don't force people into that relationship. And that's the kavachomer from that to the MMS. But it's fair to say that you can't expect me to divide up something where it now becomes useless to me. When you have something, by the way, that's ein bo din chaluka, there is a discussion later in the Gemara. I mentioned this, whether or not one partner can say go to ikud, whether you can force a buyout. But generally, it's assumed. I think I you have to ask. Your dad's a lawyer by training, right? I know not by practice now, but ask him if he remembers from, you know, contract law in general in partnerships. Is there presumed to be a right to divide up a partnership? Assuming you could go into partnership and have stipulations. But my sense is that generally it's assumed that when you're partnerships can either be broken up or you can force either buy the party out or often the person buying you out. Right? I think it's probably an age old issue grappling with this issue. You know, often you go into partnership with somebody. I've seen this happen and it feels like a great idea. And then, you know, into the partnership, it's like, I can't deal with this person. So the truth is you could argue in certain, not all these cases, in some of these cases, by chatzah, for example, the argument why you should be able to force a division is because of hezekriya. I would say hezekriya, but for privacy. It's not hezekriya because if we have a joint chatzah for one big happy family, that maybe we're really not. But generally speaking, you know, I'm sure that we don't force people as long as it's reasonable to make a division one way or the other. In some form or fashion, we don't force people to stay in relationships they don't want to stay in.
So it's less than anonymous. Then is it that there's no hezekriya, or there is hezekriya, but just I can't force you to split because.
Well, so I would, on a technical argument, I would say that there's no hezekriya when it's a joint chatzah, no matter how big the chatzah is. Because hezekriya implies I have a rishus, and I can't use it because you're staring at me. But I don't have a rishus here. We have a rishus together. Once we divide it up, now I have a reshus, but I can't do the things that I want to do. So I would argue the reason why you can't divide up when it's small than, you know, when just that arbanus comes out of our sazer, is because if my chatzer is so small, I can't do the normal things that you need to do in a chatzer, like loading and unloading. I think the Gemara's example is going to be you need a certain amount of space to unload your stuff. And in the chatzer, you're not going to bring your camel into the house. Right. So you're going to take in the chatzer, you unload it. But if you have enough room in the chatzer to unload your camel, then the chatzer doesn't function. I think the bias is for allowing people to divide it up. But if it's not functional, then that's not reasonable.
So if the chatzer is big enough, then hypocrite is essentially, if you don't want to split up the chatzer, then you're agreeing that you're okay with it.
Definitionally, yeah.
And now if it's too small, then we're saying that there's something that counts as agreeing.
I think so. Now, even though what I would say, again, it'd be interesting to see if you really come up with an afkamina, because hezek re'iyah, other than forcing you to build a wall, which obviously if you're aimed at the chalukah and you're divided, I can't force you to build the wall. Is there an afkamina? But at least conceptually, I would argue that there's no hezek re'iyah until it's separate reshuyas.
Seems it's bigger than the amos, and I want to split it. The reason why I want to split it is not because of the hezek re'iyah, it's just
because I'm allowed to split break up a partnership. My motivation might be because then I can do private things in the chatzah because now I'm able to force you to build the wall. But I wouldn't say the right to break it up is of hezek re'iyah because they're going to talk about a sadeh gina, how much, and there the calculation, again, it's all practical calculations. I have to hire a plow for the day, but so I don't want to hire a plow when I only have half a day's work for that plow that I brought in. So it's all very practical. And in the Bikkah, certainly, right, there's no, by default, we don't assume hezek re'iyah. So it's not hezek re'iyah that allows me to force the division there. It's the right to divide up the partnership. I never thought until you asked the question now, it's such a basic principle, and what I'm responding to is my sort of gut reaction to it, but I could be wrong, but it's an important question. Within the laws of Shukfis in general, what gives the right for a party to divide, to put force a division, or go to Igud for those who say you can say go to Igud, right? Buy me out or I buy you out.
Okay.
Yeah.
If in the Sephardic,
I think it's not okay. Yeah. That would also be a second problem because individual chumashim are regarded as having, I think, less kedusha. I don't know how technically less the kedusha is. You can't use them b'tzibor lachatchila. Right? In korim b'chumashim b'tzibor mekavrat tzibor. Chumash doesn't mean, you know, my printed chumash. It means a sefer written just like a sefer Torah, but one chumash. What's that? So in some sense, it's more about kodesh. Again, technically speaking. What you're allowed to, in other words, the kedusha would have to be treated, I don't think, changes. The only maybe an afkamina, but I don't know if it's an afkamina. Are you allowed to put a chumash on top of the sefer Torah versus say on top of a chumash? Right, the Gemara does say you can't put a neviim and ksuvim on top of a chumash, but you can put a chumash on top of neviim and ksuvim. Just for the record, although I'll probably say this again later in the year when we get there, there is no distinction between neviim and ksuvim. There's this mythological thing, you know, that neviim, you can put neviim on top of ksuvim, so neviim. Don't say any such thing in the Gemara. It runs in, I'm going to leave this. When we get to the Yachidah, I'll give you guys a little bit of a taste. Those who didn't take intro, I'll give you a little bit of a taste of it. Some of them are talking about the Chazal stuff, and we've shown them talking about Kedusha Sar and so on. But let's leave it till then, okay? As fun as it is. Okay, so now, skipping over the brackets, which is assumed not to be in the Gemara, B'mayim kim delmas nisam, b'yishem ba'din chaluka, b'yishem ba'din chaluka, ki ratzu ma'yhavu nehadrabu. Very nice, Gabe. We have a chatzer jointly. You know, it's very small. Okay, you want me to break it up? Fine. I'll break it up, Gabe. Okay, come back to me the next day. Say, I don't feel like it. But you said you would. And said, that's very nice, but that's irrelevant. What makes it binding? Okay, so I'm going to violate Shevis Yisrael Yaslu Avla. Maybe I'll be what they call a Chusre Amana. And if I promise to give you a gift, a small gift. If I promise a large gift, apparently, and then I don't do it, it's probably not considered a Chusre Amana, that I'm lacking in trustworthiness. It's a moral category, not a halachic one. I imagine it's because if I promise to give you a $10 gate, you might believe me. If I promise to give you $100,000, you'll say thank you, but you know, I'm probably not going to give you $100,000. It doesn't mean that again, these are like categories of moral opprobrium, right? Clearly the promise, except for the fact that if I say something, which we all understand is true when I say it, which means it's just a manner of speaking. Like you ask somebody, how are you doing today? Baruch Hashem, right? Which everybody, you should, you know. Well, you know, that's taken to mean I'm doing well, but that's not really, you're not often doing well. You'd say, Baruch Hashem. Okay, when you ask someone politely, you say, how are you? You don't really expect an answer. It's just a polite way of greeting, but it's not to be taken literally. So if I promise, yeah, Gabe, I'll give you $100,000. well, no, I'm not giving you $100,000. It's not that I made a commitment that I'm back in. It's just a social interaction. I had a chavrusa many years ago, Rabbi Beitler. He teaches, I think, in Torah Academy now. And you'd ask him when he was under the weather, you'd see him, and you'd ask him, how are you feeling? How are you today? He would say, Baruch Hashem Ra'an. Right, which is correct, because Shashem Shem Baruch Ha'atol Baruch La'ra. But, you know, today, typically, you don't want to go into detail, because you don't want to share everything in your life. So it's a polite way. How are you doing? Baruch Hashem. Okay. Baruch Hashem, because it doesn't matter how I'm doing. Either way, it's Baruch Hashem. You're right. Okay. Yeah.
The Gemara is asking this question in a language that applies only to the second level.
Correct. But Rashi, I think, would say that in FMI, the Gemara's answer will answer the question you should have asked there. The Gemara only formulated this way because it just came off the second lashon. That's what Rashi would say. Okay, so now the Gemara is taken back out. So Amar Avasi, Amar Yochanan, Shekhan Yadam. Just as a general rule, and if I send you to the store, Yoni, to buy milk for me, and you go buy the milk, and you pay your money, and then you come back and I say, you know, I changed my mind, I don't even know. And so you'll say, and I'll say, well, I didn't make a kinyan with you. So the answer is, I'm hired to pay you for the milk. Why? Because you undertook an action, effectively, as my shaliach, even if we make a kinyan on it. And once you incurred a monetary obligation, so then you are liable, I'm liable for the money that you incurred. Right? So in other words, kinyan isn't always necessary. Isn't always necessary on something to make a person chayav. So the Gemara says, Amar Vasi Rabbi Yochanan Shekanu Miyadam. They made a kinyan. Yoni, we're going to divide up the chatzot. Here, take my mouse and pick it up. That's really nice. But the Gemara says, Shekanu Miyadam. I have a kinyan Dvar Ba'amahu. What's the kinyan? What did you give me in exchange for my mouse? The answer is nothing. Right, you gave me a promise to do something. That's an asmacha, essentially. It's kinyan dvarim. Doesn't mean anything. So the Gemara says, "V'kishkanu miyadam beruchos." No. I said, Yoni, here you go. You take my mess, and in exchange, I get your share in the eastern side of the chatzah, the one next to my house. And once we make a kinyan that transfers one part of the chatzah, the other part is automatically transferred as well. It's understood as part of it. Comes along with Rashi, and he says, "Kegon shalach zevetel shalom v'hechzik v'zevetel shalom v'hechzik." Each one went. So the first method was a kinyan chalipin, and the second one was no. Basically, I made a chazak in my part of the chatzer. I put up a little, I don't know. I did some type of machine, or I built something there, and therefore that's the normal kinyan of chazaka on karka is not al gadar reparat. Either I broke down the wall, I put in the wall, no, I'll probably means I changed the locks. It probably doesn't mean just, not just turning a key. That's not, those are all signs of bailus. That's why it's a kinyan hazaka, right? Normally, karka is acquired, the Mishkan Kiddushin says, in one of three ways. Kesef, which is a symbolic kinyan. I give you a proof that doesn't have to be the value of the karka. Even if, let's say I'm giving you the field as a matana, where you're not even going to pay me money, but you can give me pruta to make the kinyan binding. Because maybe you don't have the time for, you can be matna through a shtar. That's not just a shtar raya. That's not proof. It could be also, it can double as a shtar raya, but you can make a shtar kinyan. You can, in a shtar, right? A mocha, you're the sub of the shtar. Same way you can be kaddish and ishi b'shtar. I write mekudeshishli b'shtar zel kedas moshe b'yisrael. You write it b'shmo, b'shmo. He gives it over. So by, you can be kone karka with kesef, with shtar or chazak. Chazaka means you do something that shows that you are bailus over it. So Rav Ashi says, each one made a kinyan, one of them made a kinyan of Chazaka. It's either, holach, zeh betosh shalom v'hechzik, oh, well, zeh betosh shalom v'hechzik. You know, you both have to. As soon as one makes Chazaka, the other one made the transfers.
The first way of doing it was that
you give me my, your zechus in my half of the chatzer. And, so that's a kinyan chalipin. And the second way was a kinyan chalipin works by karka as well. It's a separate, you know.
So it's kesef shtar,
yes, the chalipin isn't done directly on the karka. You need the talpun for that, right? So in other words, you pick up the mouse on the mouse, which is kinyan talpun, and the mail of the karka is transferred. If you want to be kona karka directly and only karka, right? In the same way you can be kona talpun kinyan agav, But that's not really a kinyan metal from the kaga of the karka. You make normal kinyan karkas. The kinyan karkas are kesef shtana chazak.
That's what.
Which Rashi?
Ravashi.
Oh, Ravashi, correct. So the Rishonim will ask the question, what is Ravashi coming to add here? So there are basically two mahalchim. There's the one that I would say comes closest to the academic Talmud approach, which is the Ramban. The Ramban says Ravashi didn't know Rabbi Yochanan's teretz. He hadn't heard it, so he gave his own teretz. Now, that isn't remarkable. That is always the central question. When does Amora, when does the Sugya know the other Sugya? When do they know that piece? The second approach is that of Tosfos, the number Rishonim echo, which is no. Normally, if we agree to sell the field and we say make it kinyan chazaka, if I am not present and you haven't made the kinyan yet, you need me to say to you lech chazeku kinyan. I have to give you explicit permission now to go to make the kinyan. Whereas the claim is in this case, because each one's being kona, part of the chutzah, Tosfos says Ravashi is adding that you don't need to say lech chazeku kinyan. As soon as they agree to divide up the chutzah, in this particular case, because of the exchange, you don't need the other party to say lech chazeku kinyan. Either party can go immediately and be kona, and the other party can't back out if they already made the kinyan. Yes, Kate.
Two questions. One, why can't Rashi just be giving an offerendive? And he didn't know the Yochanan's answer, and he's not adding anything, he's giving off there. This is another way that you could have done.
Okay. So the point is that Ravashi, the point of the Sergi and Ravashi is not to teach us Kinyan Makarka. Right? You kind of have a third Amor come along and say, oh, one of them gave the other a little piece of kesef for it, or another one wrote a shar. So Tosus just says, what is Ravashi coming to be adding? So that's why I know from for people like me who are not such a key in this, so I think, oh yeah, Ravashi taught me, reminded me of a new din, that's a good thing. The Tosfos says it's so elementary, why would Ravashi actually bother, right? The whole point is that the point, both Terutzim say the kasha of the Gemara is it's a Kenyan Dvarim. The answer of the Gemara is no, is that it's a real Kenyan. So you don't have to list every one of the Kenyan.
And also according to Yochanan, I think I can, so you only pick up the math and it's not going to give his part of that half of us. Then how did you get the full share? How did he get the full share of your part?
Because in the mouse is also going along with the mouse. When he is cone of that, part of the price is that he's giving me his part.
So I'm saying, then how does he get your part?
No, oh, I'm sorry. No, so it's going along with it. They go mutually. Just as. In Ravashi's case, the way that we show them to say it's not halach zed v'hichsik, vid halach zed v'hichsik, but oh. It's basically an extended form of the chalipin. When we have a king of chalipin, so as soon as one party does the mishich on theirs, the other part is automatically nicknessed. So when Yoni makes the king on this, coming along with this is my karka, as his karka goes to me. That's all. In other words, it all gets lumped together with it.
He gets it. I mean, is it that when he's mocking his part of the karka for you, at that point, you're mocking your part of the him, or is it when he...
I think when he pulls the mouse. I think. It's a good question. I don't think it'll be shown him addressed explicitly here. This is not... Because most cases are straight-up halifin. Mouse for the karka. Here, this is mouse for the karka and the karka. Mouse for the karka for the karka. My assumption is that it goes along with the... The question is there an afghanina? And I sit and think in Kinyan and Kifon and Afghanina, this is going to happen at the same time. It's not like there's going to be a lag, so that's, you know, it doesn't have to be A, B, and C, or can it be A, B, C? So, yeah, there are, there's enough. Yoni?
For Ravashi's case, only one of them has to go, essentially just taking a stroll in the garden.
No, you have to make a chazakah. I wasn't going to say anything, because I always have to decide how much do you go crush us when you're doing the case. But there's a fascinating Gemara in Baba Kama, because on the top of that test, the Gemara there is talking about a mecher and back out on a mecher. And the Gemara says, on the top of Tesamaral, I sell you a field, and then as in the process of selling, it becomes clear that there are people of kindness against your field, and that's whether or not you really own it. It's a mocher sada, bachrai shlo bachrai shiyatzo la sikin. So the Gemara says, depends whether you made a chazaka or not. If you didn't make a chazaka, you can be chozer bo and say, listen, I'm not buying the field from you, even though I get to buy it, because there are all these problems with it. The Gemara also asked, must I have a chazaka? When is it a chazaka? Which is a bizarre question, because we know, kesef shar, and chazaka, we know what they're, null gadar parts.
The Gemara answers, Mechidayish HaMitzarei. When you stomp, when you step or press on the borders of the field. So this, I'm not going to go into the discussion here. Some Rishon said means you literally, if the two, your field is next to this field, then you rub it out. So you really made a kind of chazaka, you joined the field physically. But some of the Rishonim say that no, that it was a kind of a tenai, even in the chazaka, that you get to survey the fields before, one last survey. Like they do in a house, maybe not in that order, when you buy a house, right before the house closes, you do a walkthrough. Like you do an inspection at one point, but then you do a walkthrough. So this is kind of like a walkthrough, but I know that there's a discussion. I don't remember the pratim somewhere in the Achronim. They talk about it. Is there actually such a kinyan as being walking the land? And the reason I'm Rashefta probably quoted this in Tarshish here, because Avraham Avinu was told, "Kut misalech baretz v'zar kol arachban." I'm sure if you dig in the Achronim, you're going to find this stress. Avraham Avinu was making a kinyan in Eretz Yisrael. That's the closest thing in the Gemara that I believe is Daya Shemitzvah. I'm sorry. So anyway, but no, normally we, with the assumption is here, you're making a chazaka, no gather of hearts, something that really is a shinui that only the Bailam would do. Okay. Fine. So this is, we're going to come back to this topic because of Kinyan Dvarabama. This is really, really, not a lot of fun, but it's a very, very important point. Kinyan needs something to be chal upon. The absence of a Kinyan means that it's asmachta, unless you have something to override the asmachta. So just two examples of that. Number one, hektesh. When you give something to hektesh, so you can't, you don't need a kinyan. The language, the correctness of the language of the Mishnah Kiddushin is amirasi lagavoa kimisirasi lahedyot. My amira to hektesh is like misira, which is one of the kinyanim in the Mishnah, to a hektesh. You don't need a kinyan by hektesh. And then the other example, which we make a kinyan anyway, but it's kind of pointless. So when you get married, so Ashkenazim, some have to practice to do tanoim, which are totally meaningless. Tanoim used to be done months before a wedding. Often it was an arranged marriage. And the family, it was really marriage of families, not a marriage of a kal and chasam. So the kal and the chasam were just a means to an end. Not always, but bottom line is the families made agreements, they made promises, and they wrote their stuff down. They accepted haramim upon themselves if they didn't fulfill, if they would back out. Tanaim were real. Now, I believe that technically speaking, those tanaim don't require a kinyan. Because the Gemara in Kiddushin, the first parak, talks about, you know, what am I giving to your, what are you giving to my son, what am I giving to your daughter? And so once they're gemar, once they agreed, so hein dvarim haniktim ba'amira. You don't need a kinyan. You don't need a kinyan because the purpose of a kinyan is to avoid asmachta, to indicate that you really mean something. And if, in general, it's true in secular law as well, asmachta comes into play when you have no consideration. In secular law as well, if I penalties run into this problem. Let's say I tell you I'm building your house, and if I don't finish the house by September 1st, I'm going to pay you $1 million. That will not be enforced in the court. If I tell you that if I don't finish your house by September 1st, every day that it's late, I have to pay you $100 because you have to rent another premises. So that's what we'll call damages. That's a different issue. That might be enforceable. But just to come some type of a penalty itself is not considered enforceable because there's not considered any there's no consideration for that. But as I promised to build your house, it's true, but that's a commitment to build your house. But $1 million doesn't somehow connect to that. If I'm damaging you, that's a different issue. So it's true in halacha as well. And every system probably has its ways of getting around asmachta issues. I'm not going to. Again, I don't think I'm going to do all asmachta because I don't know all asmachta. I'm going to do all asmachta. We could, but you do kinyan dvarim. You could decide against time to talk about asmachta. But the assumption here is that the chibas hanisuin of the two parties, they're so happy about and rejoicing about this marriage that they're fully committed, even though they don't make the kinyan. So we do. When I make the tanayim, don't mean anything anymore. Ramosha gutted them. In fact, I think I heard the story at a student's wedding recently. The rabbi of the Kalas family, it seems like a personality, was telling me while we were waiting at the chuppah, he was regaling me with stories. He said, this guy's got to be at least in his 70s. But he claims, I think it was when his mother got married, what Ramosha had promised something, his family was close to Ramosha, and Ramosha had forgotten to do something, and that was the time Ramosha gutted it tonight. He basically came up and wrote a new document. He said, tonight we're meaningless if you're doing that at the time of the wedding. So the Rav, I'm told, was very opposed to doing tonight. For, I don't know if it's because he didn't like it in the first place, or because once you do it at the wedding, it's a joke. But bottom line is that
is that when we do Tanayim, it's totally meaningless. When I make the kinyan with the fathers, or making a kinyan with another, I say this is to quote a piece of popular culture, which if you don't know, lucky for you, it's a kinyan about nothing. So bottom line is they make a kinyan, but it's kinyan about nothing because they're not mimakne at this point. But even if they were, there's no need to make a kinyan. It's the Ramanik and Bamir. But okay, anyway, so bottom line is the issue was one of seriousness and commitment. I think as something of a slight parallel, there things flip with Hekdesh here. Generally speaking, if you engage in a transaction and you do something, you can back out something that is not a physical fact. You can back out Tokhe de Dibor. You can back out, even Hekdesh, you can back out Tokhe de Dibor. There are only four things you can't back out Tokhe de Dibor. The Gemara Nedarim, it's way at the end of the Nesechus. There are four things you can't back out. And those four things are Gittin, Kiddushin, Megadef, and Oveda Vizar. Now, the way I think Rav Shechter explained this, maybe the Rishonim say this, I don't remember, is that the reason you can back out Tokhe de Dibor is because maybe you didn't really mean it in the first place, right? The fact that you say within seconds, when I say, you know, okay, I'm selling you this cup of water, and you're about to make it, and I say, you know what, no. It means when I did it in the first place, that wasn't really serious. But nobody engages in Gittin, Kiddushin, or Megadef, or Oveda Vizar. It wasn't serious when they do the act. They can't say, just kidding. You can't do that right afterwards. So in a certain sense, the smachta on a different plane, because there is, operates in a similar way. In other words, the obligation of a kinyan, is much greater, when you need to, indicate gemira stas. And a smachta is the absence of gemira stas. Okay. Fine. So now the Gemara goes on to the more nuts and bolts zoning laws, construction rules. Gemara's explains on that first, last, of the two medium width lines, Gvil Ave de la Meshapia. Gvil, which I don't think is a biblical Hebrew word. And in fact, it's usually in rabbinic Hebrew, this is not normally what Gvil means. You know what Gvil usually means? A parchment. Gvil Nisra, Osios Parchos, Hanina Ben Trajan, which we'll refer to in the, in the Asar who came out for Sinela Esther. I don't think we quote that part of it, but we quote his martyrdom. So he tells them that the Gvil Misrafim and Osius Parchos.
Is that also the Pasim?
What's that?
That was
the Pasim.
Bav. Or is there better like the
border? Gvulin, yeah. So Gvil are Avne Delam Shapya. They're stones, but they're not hewn. They're not like cut into clear blocks, so they have protrusions jutting out, so they're not as narrow. Okay. Gozis only is Avnei D'Mishapya. That's why Gozis requires a tefach left, because you don't have to worry about all the protrusions. It's a smooth wall. So how much space do you need? Well, by Gvil, because these stones have got pieces on either side, it's going to block 6 tefachim of usable airspace. Each person gets 3. Gozis, because they've smoothed out the stones, they've cut them down, you only need 5 tefachim. Okay. Then Kvisin are Orche, which are half bricks, and Levenim are Livne. So now the Gemara is just going to go through, how did you know that Kvilim were the unhewn stones and the Kvisin were half bricks? Why not the other label? Okay. So the Gemara says, Amalei Rabba Breder Rabba Lamarvashi, Mimai Dekil Avni Delamashapkinin, who. Now, how do you know that Gvil is basically solid stones, but they're not smoothed out, so they take up more space? Maybe. And the high tefach, Yisera, the marsh of the karnasa. And the purpose of the extra tefach is because the piece is sticking out. Dilma, palga de gazasu, maybe it's half hewn stones, by tefach Yisera, the bainet urivehu. Maybe it's two stones that are square as blocks, 2.5 tefachim wide, but you need a tefach liminal for the glue, for the mortar. Just as, kibbutz karmin and kvisin are arche, and levein and livne, by tefach yisera, levein and urve. So how do you know? So amar le, v'li tameh, kvisin arche, min olam. How do you know that kvisin are half bricks? Ela gemar gemin yilei. We have a tradition, that's what the word means, in this Mishnah. So gvil ame, avne, lemshafi, gemar gemin yilei. And we have a tradition. And now the gemar is going to say the same thing, but it's just going to reverse it. Ikad amre. Maybe it should be livne de la mashapim. Bricks that were not, they were, you got the rejects. You got the reject bricks, the ones that weren't so smooth. And the purpose of the extra tefach is because the piece is sticking out.
So Livnei de Lomashapin, by Tepach Seres on the Marshal de Kamsa, Kitamina, Kita Kamin, and Kvila Abde de Lomashapin, and Gosis Abde de Mashapin, by Tepach Seres on the Marshal de Kamsa. So I'm really the same response, just invertedly, Tameich. Kvila Abde de Lomashapin, Nolan, and the Gemar Gemila, Hachanami Gemar Gemila. Fine. Amar Rabbi. Shmami na, Kolbeine Orbe Tepach. Between, whenever you have two rows, the space you have to leave in between two rows of bricks or two rows of stones, in order to have enough glue, is a tefach. But hani nidi betina, that's only true if you're using mud, avo beriksa, if you're using riksa, which are little stones, pebbles, gravel, so there, then boitve, you need more space. Ve'ikada amre, hani nidi beriksa, avo betina, lo boi kuleya. All right, you have to ask the people who work in construction materials. Fine.
This is like a lot of space, no?
What's that?
Both tefach of like plastic.
So, Gabe, one thing to keep in mind, this is a general issue. When I first tried learning Yecheskel on my own, and I learned the last parts, he was describing walls that were like, you measure with a kana, six amos, and it's not like a wall with six amos wide. And I look at this, it's like, yeah, you know, that's like 9 feet, 10 feet, 10 and a half feet. It's like, this is ridiculous. Cricket, what's going on here? And then it took a long time. I was much older, several years ago, then I was visiting the old city. I was near the Carno and I saw the broad wall. And it started to dawn on me, oh, because we actually have much, much better machined materials, much better construction. We get away with very thin walls. I don't know, Manhattan's a little different. You know, with the apartment buildings, I don't know what it is. It's still nothing like this. If you go to, one day you come to my house, you know, if I can show you any open space in the wall, what a wall consists of in a typical house in suburbia, is forgetting about the siding and the outside, you have, a piece of, I don't know what the outside, you might have, might be plywood. So you're talking about inch thick, if even, and if any inch, they call it an inch, it's probably 3/4 of an inch, that's the way, 2x4s are not 2x4s, it's like 1 3/4 by 3 3/4. Okay, but you come, you get a, you know, inch thick of plywood, you have the framing, which is going to be 2x4, so maybe 3 3/4 inches. They nail, that's basically what looks like an inside of the house, but they finish it. They nail sheetrock typically on the inside, which is, you know, yay thick. And they paint it, or they put wallpaper on it. That's it. So you're talking about a wall from the outside to the inside, which is not more than 6 inches thick. Okay, and then there's the siding. The brick siding, that's a little thicker. It's a few inches. But if you put, you know, typically a cheaper vinyl siding, or you stucco, 6 7 inches, that's the entire wall. And when you talk about a wall between two rooms, you're talking about literally, you don't even have, you'll have the sheetrock on each side and the 2x4 framing in between, less than 6 inches. Is what you're going to have. So we're able to do that because even you can see in the Gemara's principles, the way we build our houses, the materials, how well they are prepared before, that's great. But they build things much, much thicker. So you look at city walls. Look at the city walls of Yerushalayim. And that's what the broad wall was, right? You could have walls that could be 20 feet thick. That's why, you know, imagine that you had walls of a city like the houses, house walls that we have, and the enemy was trying to besiege you and trying to break through the walls. How long would it take for the break through the walls, you know, of a house in Teaneck, New Jersey? The answer is not more than 3.5 minutes. But when you have 20 feet thick of dirt and rocks and so on, it's a major project to break through those walls. So even when they built their house walls, I mean, you have to, you know, look at the, I don't know if you probably don't have any exposed place, but in the apartment buildings in the city. So there, I mean, you can see here the wall is already substantially thicker. Not the inner walls are probably not thick at all, but the outer walls are probably substantial. I take that back. Yeah, they may not even a foot. I am thinking about that first of all. So for us, walls are very thin, but their walls were much thicker. So they had a tefach just the Bein Eorvei. That wasn't surprising. Yeah, it's hard in general when you deal with Matthias questions. It's always a trap we fall into is that we basically project our world onto theirs. And that is rarely the case. Rarely the case. Human nature hasn't changed in 2,000 or 4,000 years, but human reality has changed a lot. Okay, so now the Gemara says, is that true? The Meimer the Begozis, Kol Dalet Amos, Gova, you have a Pusya Chamsha Koi, Ila Lo Koi.
the presumption behind the Mishnah is the reason why, again, it's a machlokus in the Mishnah, whether these shiurim of the walls are subject to Minhag HaMedina. Most rishonim don't say lykosis. They say that these are fixed shiurim. These are zoning codes. So why is the shiur six tvachim for gazis? Five tvachim for gazis. For a wall in the chatzer, the answer is because a wall is supposed to be dalet amos tall. And the zoning codes want you to build a wall thick enough that it's not going to fall over because we don't want to, nobody wants to be dealing with it repeatedly. So the Gemara says the conclusion one is going to reach is that five tvachim thick of a wall is going to be enough to hold four amos. Because if you didn't need five tvachim, they wouldn't have imposed that obligation. So the Gemara says, Ha'ama traksin, to have a gavoa plus an amos, will have a pushy, unless she's pushy become. So in the Mikdash, there was the, in the second Beis HaMikdash, they had, there was an Amma, the Kodesh HaKadosh was 10 Ammas long, the Kodesh outside was 20 Ammas long, and there was a wall in between. In the Bais Rishon, I'm sorry, it was called the Amma Traksim, there was probably a doorway in it, that entered from the Kodesh Kachim, from the Kodesh to the Kodesh HaKadosh. In the second Bais, they weren't sure what the Kedusha of that Amma was, so they put a Paroch on each side, and there was in-between space, the way the Kohen used to enter on Yom Kippur. If they would lift up the curtain on the south side, the outer one, and he would sort of go in that, and he would walk between the curtains all the way to the northern end. And the northern one was paruch a little bit right there, and that's how he would enter. So in the second Beis HaMikdash, the Gemara is about to say, they didn't have the wall because they couldn't. The Beis HaMikdash was too tall, the Binyan Shel Hordas. But in the Bayit Rishon, 30 Amos tall, and the wall was one Amos, called the Amatraxin. There you'd have to worry about what the Kedusha was, because it was solid. Right? In the Mishkan, it was 20 and 10, but it was a single parochus, there was no Amos. So you knew which side you were, right? That was easy. But somehow in the Mikdash, there was an extra Amos. They weren't sure what its Kedusha status was. Okay. So, but yet, it was 6 Tvachim for 30 Amos. So the Mishnah is telling us 5 Tvachim for 4 Amos. They only need one additional tap for the 30. So the Gemara says, and it stood. So the Gemara says, once you have the additional tefach with, you can go much higher. Now, that may sound crazy to you, and on some level, in these dimensions, it might be a little crazy, but imagine the following. Supposedly I give you a fairly thin block to stand on its side. You could probably make it stand on its side. Now, if I were to reduce that block, you know, a Jenga block, okay, twice than I could have, right, it's about this thing. If I were to reduce it, you know, and I can probably get that to stand a few inches, stand on its side. Suppose I were to cut it in a quarter. You know, it's not paper thin, but it's not much more. And I would have cut its height in a quarter. Do you think could I still get it to stand? Because of course not, right? In other words, there is a certain minimum width which provides stability that it doesn't really matter how high your thing is. You need that. Now, obviously, when you start to go much, much, much higher, eventually you do need a thicker bottom, right? And the Gemara will say that. But saying that you need 5 tefachim for 4 amos, but 6 gets you to 30 is pretty wild. But this is what the Gemara says. I would trust them, by the way, their sense more than I would trust my sense. Okay, so the Gemara says, okay, fine. Uve mikdash sheni, my time alo avud, Amatraxin. I'm going to say this once this year, just for your Aramaic grammar. That form of wood, which is standard in Aramaic, called the Tikkun Rabbanon, Ke'indo Raisa Tikkun, is a metathesis of the letters. It's standard in Babli Aramaic. It's called the Avadu Rabbanon, the Avadu, called the Takanu Rabbanon. The Vav gives it away, it's plural. It's a plural verb. So my time alo of wood, Amatraxin. So the Gemara says tikoi b'plus is koi. Say lo koi. There's a limit even when you got one extra tefach that gets you a lot higher, but not forever. Uminalan dahav gavoa tzvei. How do you know that the second Beis HaMikdash was so much taller than the first? Tichsin. They go to pasuk from I think Chagai. Gadol yeh habayis hazeh. Acharom and harishon. This was Chagai was giving them muster because they were lazy. They were building fancy mansions themselves. But they weren't rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash. So God said, I'm going to withhold the rains from you and withhold your produce. And God reminds them, Li'akesa, Li'azahav, everything belongs to me. So you build my house. So
So, but the Navi promises that the second Eisa Mitzvah would be greater than the first one. So what's the greater? Rabu Shmuel, Rabu Shmuel, Amir Yochanan Elazar, Chadamar B'binyam V'chadamar B'shanim. One said that it was bigger in size. One said that it lasted longer, because it lasted 420 years as opposed to 410. The East Elaha, the East Elaha. They were both true. It was bigger. Binyan Shalhurdus was bigger. So the Gemara says, okay, fine, but B'ni Avdu plus an Amid the Binyan, B'idach Le'avid Paruchas. Why did they make the whole thing in, with a parochas? Why didn't they at least build the wall for the part that they could? So the Gemara says, "Ki koi tlasan amasa nami agav tikra maziva hu dekoi, velo tikra maziva lo koi." So the Gemara says, "No." The Gemara says that, you know why 30 amos could stand? Because there was a wall to brace it at the top. Now, by the way, once you say that, that might also answer. Tosus doesn't say this. But that already partially answers the Gemara's original question. You know why you need 5 tfachim for 4 amos in the chatzer, but 6 tfachim and amma was enough for 30 amos? The answer is because the chatzer, the walls, it's got nothing on top of it. So roof sort of providing stability in the Beis HaMikdash. With the amma tfachim, there was a roof on top. So that sort of held it at the top.
Yeah, that's the
Oh, I'm sorry, he did. Okay, I thought so, but I thought, so the top closest points out that with the next teretz, you don't have to go, you don't even need this. So now the Gemara says, v'liyavid ma'da esher b'binyam, v'liyavid edaf parochas. Okay, you can't make 30 amos, but you can certainly make 4 amos, we know from the chatzah, you can make something. So amar abayi gemiri ikula b'binyam, ikula b'parochas. Ikula b'binyam, mi mikdash, ikula b'parochas, mi mishkan. Now once you give that teretz, you know, it could be that 30 amos would stand even without a tikkun maziva, but you can't make 30 amos and then the rest parochas. You have any question?
No.
Of course, once you say a bayish thing, then you, maybe you do need the original teretz, right? If you undo the tikkun maziva teretz, now you need the original one. Fine. Now the Gemara asks one more building materials, one more technical aspect question. You would plaster the outside of the wall, and there was some degree of thickness. So when the Mishnah speaks about giving up your amount of space in the chotzer, did that include the plastering or not include the plastering? So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, Nistabra Hain V'Sidon. The Sid was part of the Cheshbon. The Isal Gadaita Hain V'Lo Sidon, Listen to the Shirei. If you're going to say that this 3, 4, 5, 6 Tzachim is besides the plaster, by the way, the plaster would have probably almost been irrelevant. If this 3, 4, 5, 6 tefachim were without the plaster, then the Mishnah should have counted how much they're giving up, the additional shear of the thickness of the plasters. The Gemara says, and why? Because, I'm sorry, one second. The Gemara says, no, lo'olam emilcha heim balosidam, echevin dol have a tefach lotani. It didn't amount to a tefach, so we're not going to mention it. So the Gemara says, v'ha katani, and you are counting half tefachim. So the Gemara says, yeah, but there hasam chasid terufe, 2 half tefachim, and after a tefach, we're going to count it. But it could be hein below sidon. So how much space do you need with the bricks? 3 1/4 tefachim. We're not going to list the quarter. Okay. Toshma, hakora sha'amru ruchava kedei lekabel areich v'areich hatsi levena shagim tefachim. So this is a Mishnah in Erevin, and without going into too many pratim, one of the ways of allowing us to carry in a mavoi, which was typically 3 walls open on the 4th of Rosh Hashanah, midoraisa, it's either a karmelis or Rosh Hashanah, that's a machlokes, but midoraisa, either way, you could carry inside the mavoi. However, there was a fear that you were going to carry from the mavoi into the Rosh Hashanah, so they required a tikkun on the 4th side. And one tikkun was known as a korah. You put a beam across the top, a crossbar, and that's enough. But how strong does the beam have to be? So Gemara says, it has to be wide enough to be able to hold an ariyah. And how much is an ariyah? An ariyah is a half on the vein of 3 tefachim. So you see that a levena is 3 tefachim. So when it says levena here, it must be 3 tefachim besides the sib. So the Gemara says, no, that's not proof. Hasam barabrasan. That's big bricks. In other words, there are bricks that are small in 3 tefachim, but the Mishnah in Erevin that says that you need a korah rechava kedei lekabel ariyach is actually a tefach, because you're allowed to have a little of the 1.5 tefachim, you can have a quarter tefach overhanging each side. But your need for a brick
a brick that's referred to as three tefachim is, yes, that's a big brick.
And the Gemara says, Deka nami, the katani shoshosha tefachim, the cloud the ikazut shamina.
The fact that the Mishnah has to tell you, levena shigam tefachim, tells you that there's other sized levenim. Otherwise, you would just say levena. Tosos here discusses, so it's true, you should ask an obvious kasha, which is, I grant you that you have, that this is a levena, not three tefachim size, but who says it's a smaller levena? Maybe it's a bigger levena. Tosos asks that kasha. Okay, whatever. But that's where the Gemara leaves it. Now, because the Gemara here engaged in a discussion of the Beis HaMikdash and its constructions and Binyan Shel Hurdus, the Gemara is now going to talk about Beis HaKnesses and Binyan Shel Hurdus. So we get a little of a tangent here from Mizikin issues from Binyan Mamanos. And we get some very important Gemaras here. Right. Sometimes shuls have damage and they have no choice but to go elsewhere. They can have fire damage, they can have flood damage. Did you hear?
No.
The basement.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, Shear was in the little cafeteria on the main level, on the entry level. Yes. So, real flooding in the basement from the building next door, which the construction had a hole in the ground or something like that. I didn't know there was because you can't see it. But yeah, there was major flooding. So, that's a case where you move because you have no choice to do it. There's no choice. But let's say you want to rebuild your shul. You want to build a really nice shul. The shul functions. Not that it doesn't function. Well, but to do so, you have to take it apart. So is that permitted? So the Gemara says, Amara Pista, Lo listor inish bay knishta ad debani bay knishta chrisi. You're not allowed to take apart a shul until you built the new shul. You're not allowed to do that. And I think it means to render it non-functional.
Okay, so it's the entire.
To render it where you can't daven it. So the Gemara says, mishum because we're afraid that going to be lazy and going to take a really long time to rebuild the shul. The ikadamre mishum siluye. They don't have a place to daven. So my benayu, what's the nafkamina between these two reasons? Ika benayu, I'm going to read with the corrections, really Tosos, the ika duchtalu tzaluye. If they have a place where they can daven, then the concern of tzaluye that it interferes with the tzibur davening is not a problem. But the concern of pshiusa that they're going to fail to rebuild it or take a really long time, that is not forever, but a really long time. So that is a concern.
But what's the problem if they don't rebuild it?
Well, because first is the mitzvah of having a Beis HaKnesses, and when you have a Beis HaKnesses, or for normal rules, unless you get the Shiva Tovei Ya'ir to decommission it, you're not allowed to use it for anything else. So the point is, you only take down a Beis HaKnesses when you rebuild a Beis HaKnesses there. So that's why the fact that you can daven in somebody's living room doesn't mean that that's okay. If it's not used in the Shiva Tovei Ya'ir Chutzlar, at least to keep it simple. And the Shiva Tovei Ya'ir, however you define it, right? The town councilors decommission the shul, then that becomes permission to take it down and give you almost anything. But with absent that permission, if you don't have the permission of the Shiva Tovei Ya'ir, but you want to rebuild redo the shul, and the assumption here is the listor is because you're going to rebuild it, so you're not allowed to do it until you build the new shul. Now, obviously, when you're doing it in situ, in place, that becomes very difficult to do. But let's say you're building it right in the real estate. We're not talking about Manhattan here. We're talking about the bottle, right? You're going to build it next door. So what you're going to do is you're going to take down the shul, and next door, then you're going to rebuild the shul. So the Gemara is saying, you got to build that shul first, and then you can take down the shul. So the Gemara says, so now, there is another girsa which says if they have another Beis HaKnesses to daven in. If in the interim there's another shul to daven in, so if you say it's Mishum Pshiusa, then it doesn't matter. If you say it's because they have a Duchom Mitzaluye, so then it would be permitted. Now this is important because we're going to Paskin Mishum Pshiusa. The question is, okay, we passed Mishum Pshiusa, so if Mishum Pshiusa, just because you have another place to pray, doesn't mean that it's better to take it down. But what if you have another shul to daven in the interim? Would it be permitted? So that depends upon the gears of the Gemara. Now, whatever the Gemara says here, the Nafgamina, is the Ika Dukha Lutzliya, or Ika Beik Tishnachwina, is what would be Asur, if we pass the Mishum Piusa, which we do. Now you see why, because it becomes relevant to the story that follows.
Why should that happen? If the concern is that we're concerned you're not going to be
No, if, but we might say we're not concerned about that. We don't think people, for example, it's clearly assumed that we're not afraid people are going to be poshea la'olam. It's only in the short term. But that too is a bizayon, and there's no shul to daven it. So if you're really concerned about pshiusa, then you wouldn't allow taking down the shul in circumstances ABC. If your only concern is that in the interim you don't have a place to daven, so A and B may be a concern, but C won't be a concern. So when I say, do we pass the Mishum Shusa, are we concerned about Shusa or not? Rav Chisda stated a day. He said, you're not allowed to take down the shul until you build a new one. Until you build a new one. Why? So if you, depending on the reason you pick, we'll determine under what circumstances it applies.
Something, you just saying, well, they're not going to rebuild this shul.
It would take a very long time. Yeah.
Even if I have another shul, I still think, it's very nice to have another shul, but
But if we're not agree, yes, but there is a kitzvah to it, meaning shiusa is not forever. Shiusa is it's going to take longer than it should. You're not going to do bezrisus. So if you don't have a beis haknesses to daven in, that's a bigger bizayon. If you have another beis haknesses to daven in, okay. So therefore, because it takes a long time, it's not the end of the world. But if in the interim we're davening in a field, we're davening in a living room. That's not ideal for tefillah, you know, certainly for the community. So that's the point.
So it's more like a God thing, or like that's the thing, just need that analogy.
If you want.
The concern is not that we have a shul which is lying, not built. Because if that would be true, then it's whether or not I have another shul.
Correct. Correct.
The concern is that we're God in a place which is not built.
Right. And when it's long term, shusa is assumes a long term concern. Now, what motivates this Haggah in the Gemara to take out a Knishta Harise is the following. They apparently didn't have AC, they didn't have HVAC in their days. And so they had actually different buildings for different times of the year. In fact, it's really fascinating. I just saw this. I don't know if it was somewhere in Iran or in Afghanistan, in the Middle East. They built their designs for buildings that actually, the way they build, Google it, like they build these special chambers on top and it causes wind flow, which actually cools the chamber. It's amazing, the engineering, before they had air conditioning. So it's a hot climate and they have ways of cooling it. So you have basically, I don't know, and those are probably old. Those are not 100 years old. So they had things for the summer. They had summer and winter shuls. So they would take the summer shul down during the winter and rebuild it then, and take the winter shul down in the summer and rebuild it then.
We design these architectural designs, sort of what's mentioned in getting a sukkah with clean.
Very, very sharp. Yoni. Yeah, and that may be they talk. I mean, there they just talk about not having the walls reach the roof. These are more complicated. It's if I remember, if you nudge me, I'll see if I can dig it out. It was really, it's like human ingenuity is sometimes unlimited. People could just use that for making peace instead of making war. It would be amazing. All right. So anyway, here's the question, Gabe. Question is, Mirema and Marzutra, what did they hold? Did they hold Mishum Shiusa or did they hold Mishum Saluye? Because if they held Mishum Shiusa, nonetheless, they took down one shul because they had another shul in the interim. It means that even if you hold Mishum Shiusa, as long as you have another shul, it's okay. If you say that they dafka were holding because of duchta mitzaluye, so then yeah, they had duchta mitzaluye, but Shiusa is still a consideration. Now, the reason why we want to know is because we're about to have a story of Ravashi where the maskon is clear. He holds Mishum Shiusa, and we pass him that way. So do we reject Maremar and Marzutra's din? Or do we say no, that their din is consistent even with Ravashi, even with Shiusa? So now the Gemara says the following. I'm sorry, we'll get to a second. Amalei Ravina Ravashi, Gabu Zuzei Umachte. Let's say they collected all the money for building the shul. It's the hardest part, raising the funds. And Umachte, it's sitting there, the money. Mai, can they now take down the shul? Because there's no concern of Pshusa. Amalei Dilma Misrami Lehu Pidyon Shri V'Yavidu Shri V'Yavun. No, we're afraid that all of a sudden it's going to be an emergency. And they're going to come forward and we'll use this money for Pidyon Shurim, which is a mitzvah. It might be the right thing to do, but it means the shul then is going to be Pshusa because we don't have the money raised anymore. Then the Gemara asks, Shrige Livne, Vahadre Hudre, Umachte Kishure. If the bricks are piled up and the wood is all cut and to spec, and the beams are sitting there. What's the did? Maybe in that case we're not concerned. All the building materials are on site. Amar leizim in the misrami pidyon shreim is not maybe having a no. Sometimes they'll have pidyon shreim anyway, and they'll sell it because it's easy to sell building materials. Finally, ihachi, if that's the case, afilu banu nami, you shouldn't be able to take down the old shul because now Tosus says, what do you mean banu? So what's to stop you from selling the old shul? So Tosus says until they daven in it. You would say once they daven in it, so then it has kedusha ready. They're not taking down the new shul. Then they can take down the old one. So that was the Gemara's kasha, the way Tosus explains it. So Ravashi responded now. He says that Dir say the Inche Lo Mezavik. Nobody's selling the shul once it's built, even if they didn't daven it. The Lo Amara in the Gemara says this probe. It'd be mutter to take down the old one once the building of the new one was finished. Having raised the money is not enough. Having the building materials on site is not enough. But once they build the shul, even though they haven't davened in it yet, you can take down the old shul. Theoretically, they could. Certainly, until they davened, yes, correct. Correct. So now the Gemara says, below Amaran, this prohibition of Rechista is Ela de Lochasi by Piyua. Only if you don't find that it looks like there's a flaw in the in the old shul, you know, there's a leak. It's like surfside condominiums. It's going to collapse. Avochazi beitiyua sasriban. You're allowed to take it apart. Kihad the Ravashi chazav beitiyua beknishta demasa mahasya sasriv ayin bekuri lohasim. Ravashi was the leader of masa mahasya, and he saw a problem in the shul, and he took his bed in there, and he didn't take it out, and he slept there. So I think it was like a leak or something. So it was going to make him miserable. Ad maske nushiche until they finish the gutters. So they finished the entire building of the old shul. But they took down of the shul. But they took down the shul, even though they didn't have another shul, because it was a danger, because there was a flaw, there was a problem. So the Rishonim will ask here, how could Ravashi sleep in the shul? Is it not a violation of Kedushas based on ethics? So Rashi and Megillah, without even referencing this, the Gemara and Megillah says that Bati Knesir Shav Abav Al Tanaihim Asri. Shuls and Chutz Laretz are made Al Tanai. So Rashi says it means Al Tanai, you can do whatever you want with them, who understand it. Many other Bishon, Satosis says, of course that's not true. They quote a Gemara Megillah where a couple of the Amoraim on a rainy day or something like that, they went into Shul to continue their learning. And they said it wasn't because of the rain per se, it wasn't because they didn't want to get the rain, but because they couldn't focus on the sugya. It was such a difficult sugya, they needed concentration. So they were going to the shul fundamentally, not for shelter, but so they could learn better. So you see, and that was in Bavel. So you see that Bati Knesis and Bavel are not applying us, so you can do whatever you want with them. They're just going in, you know, let's say they were going just to protect themselves from the rain. Why would there be a problem? Tosfos says no. It means that Bati Knesis and Bavel, when they get destroyed, because eventually we're all going to move to Eretz Yisrael, so they don't retain their Kedusha. That's what Al-Tzayim and Masuim. But not that when they're standing, you can do in with them whatever they want. Other Rishonim quote kind of a compromise. They say that a Dvar Mitzvah, or things, you know, are okay. At one of the other Gemaras they used to factor in, this is the Gemara in Arvei Tzachim, the Gemara in Achlokas, Rav and Shmuel, where they need Kiddush Brachim Sudana. And one of the Rayas that you don't need Kiddush Brachim Sudana, one of the attempted Rayas, it fails, is why do you bake Kiddush in Shul? So the answer the Gemara gives for Shmuel says the Inkir Shemachim to that matter, right? Is that Bishul the Orchim, the guests who are staying in the shul. So the Rishonim here say it, and they say no, they weren't staying in the shul; they were staying in the sidewalks of the shul. But Rashi would say they were staying in the shul because Batei Knesset Shabbat Al Tanaihim Asuri. Okay, so that this is a very important halach lemaisa. It's very, very important in terms of what shuls, what sanctuaries of shuls can be used for. Okay. I'm going to jokingly use my favorite line, which you'll hear a few times this year. We're learning Baba Basra, not Baba Maisa. I don't know what, it's true that if you're going to do certain things, maybe it's better to have the Aron covered, but that just doesn't address Kedusha Space Akneses. So, I don't think so. Okay, so then, the Gemara asks Akasha. Gemara says, if that's Bava Ben Buta, who was a great sage, we're going to see the story on the Thalam Lala, that after Hordis killed all these rabbis, because he was upset at them. He wanted to do tshuva. And Bava ben Buta's advice, we had blinded. His advice was, rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, meaning build a fancier Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara says, how could he advise that? You have to take down the old one and you don't have another one in the interim. So the Gemara says, Avamar Krista, the Lister Inish Beikrisha, the Bani Beikrisha Risa, maybe he saw a flaw. No, when the government, I don't know if this would appeal to some people in the United States today watching how effectively our government functions, but when a melech says he's going to do something, he's going to do it. So if the malchusa says it, they're not going to back out. If the king says he's going to uproot a mountain, he's going to uproot the mountain. Okay. He's not going to back out. So the Gemara just tells the story. How did Hordas get into trouble? Hordas avda the base kashm and I have it. Hordas was an eved to the Hasmonean kings. He saw this beautiful Hasmonean princess and he had split her eyes at her. Yomachad one day, and I'm just going to state this at the outset. Stories of this nature should not necessarily be read as literal history. It's all true. There are probably connections and kernels of history in it, but you shouldn't read a story like this necessarily literally because Chazal may have had a different agenda and they had a different sense of what history is. So I'm not telling you the story exactly that didn't happen, but don't automatically assume that it did. So Shama Baskal, to Amar, kol avda demarid hashta matzlach. Any eved who redeems right now is going to be successful. It's a propitious sign for rebelling against your master. Come katlin l'kulei meruse. He killed, he wiped out all Hasmonean kings, yes?
What exactly is Baskal?
Well, that's a great question. In this particular case, given that it's Herod, I would say he heard a voice in his head. Okay. I don't think it was, Baskal is supposed to be the remnants of Nebuah. I don't think, you can explain it however you want to explain it. I would say that Herod heard a voice. In this case, I'd say Herod heard a voice in his head. And it gave him the fortitude to go and assassinate all the members of the Hasmonean household. Understand the historical background. The Hasmonean household was also falling apart, in all of its dysfunction and debauchery and so on. Herod didn't push over a strong pillar. He pushed over a weak pillar. Anyway, he rebelled. Come katlun l'chule maruse, killed all his masters. Of shire le yanukta. He left aside that one princess. When she realized what he wanted to do, which was marry her, A, because he was attracted to her, and B, because he wanted legitimacy. She went up to the roof, cried out, anybody who says I'm a descendant of Hasmoneans is actually an Eved, because no one was survived from the Hasmoneans, except for that Tinokes. And she fell, literally jumped off, not literally fell, but I mean she jumped off the roof, from the roof, the igra to the ground. So she committed suicide. Tamna sheva shina medusha. He preserved her body for 7 years in honey. Honey is a preservative. It's an antibiotic at least. Ika da amri ba'ala, ika da amri lo ba'ala. There's those who say he engaged in necrophilia, and those who say he didn't. Ha da amri lo ba'ala. The one who said, the Amrila Bala that said he engaged in necrophilia, Hadatam Nalei Yisubi B'Yitzray, he preserved her to satisfy his Yitzahara. Who the Amrila Lobayala, the one who said that he didn't actually engage in necrophilia, Hadatam Nalei Yisubi B'Yitzray, Basmelach Nasa. He wanted so he could claim legitimacy. Now, the claim, by the way, I'm going to stop here. When we resume Bekiyas, which will be on Thursday, I do have to do a little bit of background of Nashim and Yochsin because I understand her claim that anybody would be an Eved, because the Rishonim point out it's not literally true, but I have to just give you a basic introduction to Yochsin because we're here and you should have it. So we have to talk about that, and then we're going to go to talk on, he goes on to kill the Pharisees because they held an Eved couldn't be Melech, and he didn't like the rabbi's psak, so he killed the rabbis. And then the Gemara will give the story about, the story of Bava Muta's advice to him rebuilding the Mikdash, etc. Oh, yes, I was going to say Fortar Babasa, yes. Tastamach Bav, yes. I just quoted it in Shir this morning, actually, because in Shir, in Brachos, we did Yanai and Shlom Tzion eating, and eating separate bench with them. And she said, if I bring you some, will you promise not to bother him? And she brought Shimon ben Jetha, her brother, right? His nemesis. It's not been test, I mean, I love that Gemara in Brachos. It's relevant to the Chil of Berach Samazon. But, so yes, Yanai there, Yanai killed, that's one version of Yanai killing the Pharisees because they cast the dispersions on his lineage. But according to the Gemara, there actually, they were wrong. He was right. Not for killing them, but for, there was no evidence that, that he was puzzled to be in his kahuna. But there's another Yanai, I don't know if he killed them, but the story of Shimon ben Shetach in Sanhedrin in the second parak, that you can't be done in Malchai Yisrael. So the short of the story is Yanai comes into court for his Eved who killed someone, and Shimon Shetach said, Amod Awek Lecha, because Vamdu Shvayan Hashim. And Yanai says, that's what you say. What do your Haverim say? And Shimon Shetach looks at the rest of them, they all like bury their heads. Nobody wants to say anything. And the Malach comes and kills them. So Yanai didn't kill them, but Yadai in there, but that led to their death in the story. So anyway, so the answer is yes. We have more than, they didn't kill all the Pharisees and the Pharisees, the Pharisees had enemies, as Chazal would describe it, people who didn't like their statements because it infringed upon what they perceived as their prerogatives. So this is one, there's another story in that category, yes. All right, I'm going to wish all of you a Ksiv Chasima Tova, those of you in person, those of you online, those who are not here, and it should be a good Gibbon start. It should be a better year for every one of us in the world. The world needs some Menucha, and have a good Yantav, and good davening, and I will see you, Be'ezus Hashem, on Thursday on Sunday davening.